Today's topic, the F word. I'm Jolene Kent, and this is Fast Forward. No, no, we're not talking about that F word. We're talking about the other one, failure. Today, we're going to discuss success versus failure in a world dominated by 24-year-old billionaires and all-time highs in tech stocks. Sometimes it just feels like all we ever hear about are the success stories, right? But what about all the rest? For every Snapchat and Uber, there are thousands of ideas that just didn't work out, and yet they got tons of funding. Today, you'll meet a venture capitalist who failed early on in his career and now meets thousands of potential failures every year as part of his job. And then we'll talk with the CEO and founder of a billion-dollar unicorn and ask him about how many times he failed in order to succeed. We're curious, what does it mean to fail? Why does it seem that failing nowadays is more socially acceptable and even welcomed than, say, a few years ago? In fact, according to Harvard Business School, startups fail 70 to 80% of the time. That is, if you define failure as not meeting the projected return on investment. And despite the odds, nearly $50 billion were invested by venture capital firms in 2014. Jeff Richards is one of those VCs. He's managing partner at GGV Capital, which gets the pitch from thousands of earnest startup founders every year. Hey, Jeff.
Great to be here.
At GGV Capital, you meet with thousands of companies between all of you there. You know, what kind of failure rate are you seeing as we go into this very seemingly a little bit frothy period?
Yeah. Well, it is one of the things that I think is unique about our business is that we do see both the success and the failures. And venture capital historically has been a very hits-driven business. So in any given fund, we have a $600 million fund. We'll probably fund 40 to 50 companies out of that fund. And in that fund, you'll see 5 to 10 companies that really, really, you know, generate super high returns, the companies that return 10, 15, 20 or more times on our invested capital. But we also see companies that don't do well. And we see those at the time that they come in to pitch us, as well as companies in our own portfolio. And I think it gives us perhaps a balanced perspective when people talk about the quote unquote bubble. I don't spend my day meeting with unicorns. I spend my day meeting
with
companies.
If only you could.
Yeah, yeah. I spend my day meeting with companies that want to be unicorns, and a lot of those won't get there. And so we have a little bit more of that balanced perspective. And I think it would be helpful to the tech and entrepreneur ecosystem if we heard more about failure, because it's a very real part of the story.
What does it mean to fail if a company receives your money?
Well, I think you have different types of outcomes. So you have entrepreneurs that will, you have some that become a zero. So you have some that just run out of money and shut down the company. We've had a few of those recently that have been sort of notable. Secret, you know, Fab sold for, I think, $15 million after raising over $100 million. So we've had some companies that have attracted a little bit of attention, but for the most part, you don't read a lot about them. They sort of go quietly, or they get quote-unquote acquired. Oftentimes, those acquisitions are not particularly lucrative. So you'll see a company get acquired by a Google or a Yahoo or a Facebook, and you know, lots of congratulatory posts on Twitter and elsewhere, when the reality was investors lost money, the founders and the team probably didn't make a lot of money, because the company never really got to the scale and the size that it needed to be successful.
What do you tell that co-founder, the CEO that you work with, that you fund, who is facing a potential failure? Obviously, it depends on every situation, but how do you approach that conversation of saying, this may not work out in your favor and you may not be Mark Zuckerberg?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg is a high bar, right? I mean,
yeah.
But I think that what you see with most good companies is there's a series of pivots that will happen throughout the company's life. So Slack, one of the darlings of our current market environment, you know, started life as a different kind of company, and Stuart sort of saw that that wasn't working out particularly well and saw this opportunity with sort of enterprise chat.
In case people don't know, what's Slack?
Slack, sorry, is a SaaS platform built for enterprise sharing of information and collaboration. And he saw that market evolving and pivoted the business into that market. And today it's valued at well over $1 billion. So I would say for most companies, there's some sort of pivot or a shift in strategy that takes place. And the best entrepreneurs are very good at reading the tea leaves.
Yeah.
And frankly, being in reality about when something's not working, right? Because that's a hard part of the problem. You've got a lot of people who are cheerleaders around you, co-founders, employees, investors, it's hard to find people that will be honest with you and say, hey, Jeff, this isn't working. You know, why don't we shift to try something else or go into a new category or a new market with the capital that we have to work with? Because most investors would like the entrepreneur to find that new opportunity, that new idea, not shut down the company. Mm-hmm. They'd much rather have them pursue a new idea, take the talented team that they've put together and go after that new idea. And so we see that a lot. We see that a lot.
It's interesting. Like, the graveyard for tech companies is actually not necessarily a graveyard.
No, and I think what you see is sometimes the companies that run really hard at a problem and ultimately fail in going after it, you know, perhaps weren't in reality about the size of the market they were going after. Maybe they weren't in reality about the demand, the actual demand
for
consumers.
But isn't that part of the job of the investor to say, maybe you're not rooted in reality here?
Or is
it just everyone at that moment is thinking, we're making this investment and we're hoping you're going to run with it? You know, the best information we have now works now.
Yeah. I think investors, most venture capitalists would tell you that when they back a team in a particular market, they're assuming that there will be some shifts and gyrations along the way, maybe even complete pivots in the entire business model. And they're trusting and entrusting that entrepreneur and that team to be aware of the surrounding conditions and make those changes. But it's hard, right? I mean, like I said, you've got some investors who won't be honest with an entrepreneur early on in the cycle because they're trying to build a relationship with that entrepreneur.
You know a little bit about this because you yourself have perhaps not succeeded at a previous venture.
You can say you failed. It's okay.
I wasn't there. Maybe you failed. What happened? What did you learn?
Yeah, back in 1997, I started a software company called Quantum Shift. We grew it from zero to $30 million of revenue in 3 years, but we ended up raising $130 million as well. And when the market cratered, our business sort of cratered with it. We had about 80% of our clients were in the technology space, and our business really was hurt. And I learned a lot of hard lessons. I started the company when I was 25, and I left when I was 30. And it was a very, very painful experience. But I learned a lot about raising money, being an entrepreneur, dealing with people, hiring, firing. I learned a lot in that short window. And, you know, I think when you've been through those cycles, there's value in having been through the up and there's value in having been through the down. And it's one of the reasons why you see repeat entrepreneurs who are successful, mm-hmm. because they learn from those experiences and they bake them into their next experience. But yeah, I experienced it firsthand and it was tough. It was really tough.
A lot of people say in Silicon Valley that failing fast is really important. Do you agree with that?
I think it helps. I mean, failing over a long time is quite painful.
Yeah, let it bleed.
And I think the idea there is iterate on the product. If something's not working, change. And there is a lot of truth to that, particularly in today's market, if you're in the consumer space in particular, where, you know, consumer interest changes quickly. So failing fast can be helpful. Figure it out and redirect your capital and your resources elsewhere. But there's also something to be said for if you're onto something big, sticking with it. Right. And yeah. Gutting it out and
going through the hard patches,
and going through the hard patches. And I think you'll see, even if we have a big downturn in the market over the next few years, I think you'll see a lot of the companies that are getting funded today, that even at high valuations, companies like House and Uber and Square
and
Xiaomi, those are companies that will withstand up and down markets. They will be here in 5 to 10 years. I have no doubt.
No matter what happens with the bubble, if there is one. Not sure.
Yeah, I think the term bubble is a little overused. I think
what's the better term, do you think?
I mean, if you look at a lot of these companies that are raising money, if they were going public, they'd be raising money at, you know, reasonably close valuations. So mm-hmm. They're not crazy. You know, one of the things we like to say is if you go public, you got to convince 100 investors to buy your shares. If you stay private and raise a couple $100 million, you just have to convince one person, right? One firm has to get convinced that they should write a check to invest in your company. So it's actually a much easier process to raise capital privately right now than it is to go public.
And that's why a lot of them are saying
that's
private.
That's right. It's a very logical scenario.
Jeff Richards, GGV Capital, a big investor in China. Thank you for coming in and doing this with us. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, it's quiz time. Which celebrity was injured by a drone when performing a concert in Mexico? I'm going to call this a drone failure. Here's a hint. Adam Singolda is, by all metrics, a successful founder. His company, Taboola, where he's the CEO, is now worth $1 billion, probably north of that. In February, he raised $117 million in his fifth round of funding, and he's moving into China. It's a startup that recommends articles, videos, and links to click on at the bottom of almost every single news article you read. Those links about a related topic or celebrity gossip. You know what I'm talking about. That's Taboola. In fact, Taboola reaches more people than Facebook, Yahoo, and AOL, according to ComScore. 74% of you American internet users on desktops see their stuff as of April. Here's our conversation about what it means for a startup to actually succeed. And you'll quickly realize, even for the winners out there, it all comes down to failure. Hey, Adam, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
So why did you start Taboola?
So it's my first job. Before that, I spent 7 years as part of the Israeli service. And right after that, I lived with my parents. I couldn't find anything to watch on TV. I was trying to relax and do nothing for a little bit. And I became very frustrated because there were so many TV shows, but I couldn't find anything to watch. And I thought I should not be looking for TV shows. TV shows should be looking for me. And I became very passionate about what I believe is a generational change we're all going through right now. You, me, and people around us, which is there's too much information out there. Doesn't it feel to you, if you think about your last year, doesn't it feel to you like it passed so much faster than 10 years ago?
Yeah, it does. And sometimes I can't even remember when I did something, even if it was a month or a day ago. And that time has everything to do with how we consume information.
I think so. And I think it's because you can always kill time. You have 4 minutes waiting for a meeting. You open your phone. You can read a blog. You can go to Facebook. You can watch a movie. You can follow someone on Twitter. There's so many things you could be doing. What do you do first? When you wake up in the morning, what's important? Who do you meet next? What is the next meal you should be introduced to, a place you should go?
And that's why you started Taboola, was to create that experience where the internet or the TV comes to you?
Yeah, so for me, it was a reverse version of search engines. You know, search and Google changed the world, because if you were anywhere around the world but you knew what you wanted to consume and you knew how to type it, Google would connect you with that piece of information. And Taboola, in many ways, in my perspective, is the exact opposite. There's so much information out there. And you may not even know what you're supposed to be searching for.
You have had so much success. Taboola, the company, which is a content recommendation tech company, by and large could be considered a unicorn now, valued at $1 billion, perhaps more. How did you get here? Did you think when you first started this company that you would get to where you are now?
So, you know, the first 5 years of Taboola were really different. You know, it took us 5 years to generate the first dollar out of what we're doing today.
And 5 years for a dollar?
The first one. And in many ways, you know, it contributed a lot to who we are today in terms of the identity we have, being the underdog, not being first to market, and what does it mean to execute in 2015 versus what it meant maybe 10 or 20 years ago. And so it wasn't always unicornish, you know, in our perspective. It was most of the time actually super difficult. And in the past 3 years, since we came to market with this new business, and it's worth maybe talking a little bit about what we do, we saw tremendous growth from single-digit millions of dollars to over $250 million in run rate last year.
And so you've been able to accomplish that because Taboola has hit amazing timing. So let's talk a little bit about what Taboola does and that intersection of, I would say, pretty lucky timing, given where the internet is.
Right. So by the way, I think luck is always a big part of any business success.
Yeah.
And in our perspective, Taboola, you know, do you know when you read the news on many, many websites, at the bottom of the article it says, you may also like?
Yeah, those pictures of celebrities, and there are always links that I want to click on. It's very annoying.
Well, that depends also who you are, Joe. But you know, it's very...
I like Beyonce, you know that.
It's very personalized. So yeah, so that's us. We power recommendation, we call it discovery, which is helping consumers discover things they may like and never knew existed. So we power that at the bottom of the article or at the end of the video, like on YouTube, when you see other recommendations for some of the most innovative media companies in the world, including NBC News, Fox Sports, USA Today, and many, many others.
And you guys are there because the companies are paying you to distribute their content?
So we pay them. So if you're, as an example, Business Insider, who just announced last week that they work with us for the next 3 years, the way it works is that some of the recommendations we present keep people on the site. So engaging consumers to stay and read more, we don't get paid for that. And the second part of our business is allowing other storytellers. It could be Nike corporate blog. It can be the New York Times. It can be Toyota, who have a new video about security and how do you keep people safe when they drive. If you have a story and you want people to discover that, you send us that story, and we may show that on Business Insider. We get paid every time someone leaves the site. So if you want every click on a click basis.
Critics would say that some of the stuff that you provide on the bottom of these news websites, especially, is clickbait and it is not good content, or it is too much of a stab in the dark. It's spam for the eyes. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a company, we content is culture, as opposed to traditional advertising models where nobody really clicked on a banner or nobody really cared about a piece of banner. What we do is we recommend content to over 500 million people a month. And in the U.S., 86% of America sees Taboola 60 times a month, 30 times in mobile, 30 times in desktop.
And in fact, you're one of the most viewed content generators. You're in the top five, according to ComScore.
We're second to Google. And that gives us massive frequency and reach. 6 billion recommendations every day are being served. But the challenge is that content is culture, and people are very passionate about what they consume. And we work with all different types of companies, all the way from celebrity to political content to educational content. And in that regard, we want to be able to, similar to search, everything that's out there that you could be searching for, we want to be able to make available for you, but we want to make it in a personalized way.
And you guys are doing this at the same time you are generating $200 million in annual revenue. And you guys are basically one of the two dominant players in this space, you guys and Outbrain. Do you consider yourself a success now? Is Taboola officially a success in your mind?
I don't know. I'm personally having challenges thinking about looking backwards and thinking, what have I accomplished? I'm more of a what's tomorrow and what can I do more. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel comfortable speaking about success so much and, you know, what have we accomplished? Because I think I'm very happy with the journey we're walking, and I hope we'll be able to do it for a long time. In terms of the competitive landscape, it's quite amazing because, you know, and if there's any founder out there listening to us right now, I can tell you there are not many VCs that have told me yes. I mean, in fact, there's so many VCs who have told me no. And VC.
Wait, let's pause for a second. You visited with venture capitalists who have said no to you time and time again?
Most of them.
What would that percentage be?
No, I mean, most VCs that we know told Taboola no at some point in our journey.
Did they think that maybe you would fail?
They told me we would fail.
And what did that feel like when they told you that?
No, luckily for me, I got so many times rejected trying to get a date early on that I was already comfortable with being rejected. But it's very uncomfortable. I mean, in many ways, being an entrepreneur, one of the biggest challenges you have is opposed to – it's so counterintuitive to face rejection. But it's so much part of your day-to-day life when you're an entrepreneur because you're selling the dream at first. Your dream is about to be morphed and adjusted into what the market really needs. And that process is very challenging for the founder and for the team behind that founder.
Do you ever feel that you're past the point of potentially failing? Because at this level, you're doing business across the world. You're a top-ranked content generator, content provider. Failure for you might be selling to another company, or maybe failure for you would be getting absorbed in a partnership. Success might look like an IPO, or success might look like maybe selling to another company. I don't know. Are you past the point of traditional failure where you think everything could be lost?
So I definitely think we can fail. I think we constantly push ourselves in terms of the culture of the company and who do we bring in and how do we keep asking ourselves tough questions, and especially in a competitive market. So we're always ahead. And when I say ahead, it's mainly product and technology. What are we doing that's sustainable, that's profitable?
And you guys are making money. You're not like a lot of startups where they start and they actually generate no revenue.
Right.
You're
so
the opposite.
So up until this last round, Taboola only used to build who we are today. In the past 7.5 years, we burned only $20 million. That's it. That's the only money we've ever used. We've raised 40. We've used half of it. And we recently raised $170 million led by Fidelity, Yahoo Japan, Comcast, mainly to grow. So we look at the last round as a way to delay our IPO and to stay private, mm-hmm. and during that private time make more mistakes and continue to grow fast. We call our culture the economy of good enough, and which is something that I gave a presentation at MIT for the MBA graduators mm-hmm. A few years back, and we came up with it because we believe mistakes is such a big part of what we do and our ability to stay humble and to innovate.
So then how would you define your success as a company? Would you, or as a CEO, would you call it the IPO? What's the first measure of success, since you say, I'm not willing to tell you that I've succeeded yet?
Right. And I almost think the same about an IPO. An IPO is an event in a company's life. It's definitely not the end. Look at the companies who went public in the past 2 years. It's a jungle out there.
It is.
The day you go
and
public.
And volatile.
Right. It's just yet another journey you're beginning. So I wouldn't call it success by any ways.
There's this idea in Silicon Valley and here in New York, Silicon Alley, that failing fast is very important. And inside your company, as much as a lot of people see it as a success, I'm sure you run into small failures and medium-sized right. failures all the time. Do you agree that failing fast is something that's important and valuable?
Yeah, I think you want to fail fast and not too many times on the same topic, right? So you want to fail as fast as you can. It's really like if you compare it to dating, you want to know as much as fast as you can. This is not going to be it, and kindly move on. And so, but you don't want to do it for the rest of your life. So I think when whatever topic or whatever area that you're trying to doubling down and try to do some research and come up with a new product, or you want to be able to allow people to call it, bluff if it's not working fast, get credit for doing so. Learn, share, and move on.
It seems to me that you operate with a little bit of fear in your belly, a little bit of fire, and that combination seems to really push you forward. Would that be an accurate assessment?
Yes. And I think, one of the things that I've said it a few times today, but it's really hard to articulate how important it is the people that you surround yourself with. If you're able to bring people that are better than you, at least in one thing that you think is important, and it's their company much like it's your company, and you make it okay to make mistakes, you're off to a very strong start. So, the only thing that I would say is the importance of people, even though it is a cliche, because people...
It sounds like one, it does.
Because it was always important, the execution part of it is, in my opinion, the most important part.
Who's a success in your mind in the world of tech and innovation?
Uber is doing a good job conquering the world, and I use them quite frequently every day.
40-some billion dollar valuation.
It's pretty good.
It's 40 times that, and you'll be there, my friend.
I know.
Can you get there?
Give us a few years.
Okay, we will be watching. Adam Singolda, you're the CEO of Taboola and the founder. Thank you so much for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having
Good
me.
Good to see you. Earlier, I asked you which celebrity was injured by a drone while giving a concert in Mexico. The answer, Enrique Iglesias. During a concert in Tijuana, a drone used for capturing crowd shots flew over him, and he reached up for it, which apparently he does on a regular basis to adjust the camera shot to himself. But this time it did not go as planned. One of the blades sliced his hand open. But the show went on. He kept performing with his hand bloodied and bandaged. Pics from fans showed he smeared a heart onto his white t-shirt. After the concert, the 40-year-old artist was rushed to the airport, where he flew to LA to see a specialist. Iglesias seems to be recovering just fine, which leads me to this great tweet from Aaron Levy, CEO of Box and guest of this show, who heard about this incident and said, quote, "The drones are starting to attack. For reasons we do not understand, they're starting with Enrique Iglesias." Just in time for our reboot segment this week, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is looking to hit reboot itself. Commissioner Tom Wheeler announced a new proposal to subsidize internet services for low-income Americans. And I want to give you the backstory on this. For the last 30 years, the government has provided subsidies for landlines and cell phone services through a program called Lifeline. It's for the poor, and it's supposed to help an estimated 12 million Americans. In case of emergency, it should allow more people to find work and eventually mobilize up and out of poverty. But now, with the practice of phone calls fading and, of course, emails and messaging just taking over, web connectivity is basically required in life. But till now, thousands of low-income Americans couldn't change how they received that telecommunications assistance. So now Commissioner Wheeler is proposing to offer the same $1.7 billion worth of benefits to go toward
broadband internet as well. He doesn't want to increase the amount, but he wants to provide up to $9.25 a month for internet in each household. The money comes from fees paid by cell phone subscribers and landline users. Wheeler's proposal has stoked more debate about cases of fraud and abuse and whether or not this entire program actually works. But the FCC proposal aims to address some of those concerns, and it's now open for comments, public comments, on how to better implement the program. A vote is expected on June 18th. And in the meantime, I'll leave you with this fact from Pew Research. According to 2013 data, 54% of those making less than $30,000 a year have broadband. Compare that with 88% of households that make more than $75,000 a year. That's it for us this week. You can catch this and all of your favorite Fast Forward episodes at foxnewsradio.com/podcast. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and of course on the Fox News Radio app. And remember, join me every day on the good old television tube. We are on the Fox Business Network, where I cover tech and innovation from 7 o'clock a.m. Eastern onward. So tweet me at Jolene Kent and hashtag Fast Forward. Till next week, keep on moving forward.